From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a terrorist attack in Yemen kills over 100 people. There is a claim of responsibility. Talks on Iran's nuclear program are halted due to a death in the family, but with hope expressed for the future.
We hope that this is a year that can bring us progress and peace.
And one African country lights a fire fueled by ivory. It's all ahead. I'm Ira Melman. Stay with us. Medical officials say more than 100 people have been killed, more than 150 wounded when three suicide bombers blew themselves up at a pair of mosques in Yemen's capital, Sana'a. The attacks took place around the time of midday prayers Friday at the Badr and al-Hashush mosques, which are associated with the Houthi Shiite rebel group that controls Sana'a. Another suicide bomber attacked amid the panic crowds. A group claiming to be a Yemeni branch of Islamic State said it carried out the attack and warned of an upcoming flood of attacks against the rebels known as Houthis, who have taken over the capital and much of Yemen. The claim posted online could not now be independently confirmed and offered no proof of an Islamic State role. The Houthi rebels, who were loyal to former Yemeni leader Ali Abdullah Saleh, engaged Thursday in fierce gun battles in the southern city of Aden with a militia loyal to current President Abd Rabbu Mansour Hadi. Four pro-Saleh fighters and two militiamen were killed in those clashes. Mr. Hadi last month escaped house arrest by the Houthi rebels who were allied with Mr. Saleh, the longtime leader who was ousted in a 2011 popular uprising. Mr. Hadi fled to Aden in a bid to reestablish his authority in the politically fractured nation. Talks aimed at achieving a nuclear deal with Iran resumed Friday, but were quickly put on hold until next week, as the Iranian delegation returns home following the death of President Hassan Rouhani's mother. Iran's news agency reported the negotiations with six world powers will resume Wednesday in Switzerland. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry offered the deepest condolences of the U.S. Friday as he wished the people of Iran and his counterpart Mohammad Javad Zarif a good Persian New Year or Nowruz.
This is Nowruz, New Year in Iran. So we want to wish the people of Iran, even as they hear the sad news of the president's mother, a Nowruz Mubarak. And we hope that this is a year that can bring us progress and peace.
Thank you. I appreciate that. In fact, Nowruz is the beginning of spring. And in Farsi, it means new day. I hope this new day will be a new day for the entire world, a new era of greater understanding and peace.
Iranian and international negotiators are working to reach a framework agreement limiting Iran's nuclear program by a March 31st deadline. That deal would lift international sanctions against Tehran in exchange. In his own Nowruz message to Iranians, U.S. President Obama said this year represents the best opportunity in decades to pursue a different relationship between the two countries.
The days and weeks ahead will be critical. Our negotiations have made progress, but gaps remain. And there are people in both our countries and beyond who oppose a diplomatic resolution. My message to you, the people of Iran, is that together we have to speak up for the future we seek. As I've said many times before, I believe that our countries should be able to resolve this issue peacefully with diplomacy.
In his video remarks, Mr. Obama said Iran's leaders have the choice to agree to a reasonable nuclear deal, which he said would end Iran's international isolation and provide greater opportunities for the Iranian people. Police in Japan say they have arrested a man who threatened to bomb the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo. Police say Okinawa resident Mitsuyoshi Kamiya made phone calls threatening to bomb the embassy as well as Camp Schwab, a U.S. military base on the southern Japanese island. Local media reports the 52-year-old Kamiya is also believed to be behind recent death threats against U.S. Ambassador Carolyn Kennedy and other American diplomatic officials. Japanese authorities say Kamiya has admitted to the bomb threats, though a motive has not been discovered. He has not been charged with making the threats against Ambassador Kennedy. Many Okinawans resent the presence of the tens of thousands of U.S. troops stationed on the island, citing troop behavior, noise pollution, and the dangers of an aircraft crash on the densely populated island. The two extremist gunmen who killed 21 people at a museum in Tunis trained in neighboring Libya before they carried out their deadly attack. That according to a top Tunisian security official. Wednesday's attack at the National Barto Museum killed 21 people, 17 of them cruise ship tourists, before the two gunmen were killed in a firefight with security forces. The attack of such magnitude in Tunisia, the only country to emerge from the 2011 Arab Spring uprisings with a functioning democracy, raised concerns about the spread of extremism to the rest of North Africa. The Islamic State group based in Iraq and Syria has claimed responsibility for the Barto attack. Several well-armed groups in Libya, which borders Tunisia, have pledged their allegiance to Islamic State. Tunisians and others have expressed their outrage after that deadly terrorist attack on a major museum in Tunis. Hundreds of protesters gathered there Thursday and vowed to defeat terrorism on their soil. European leaders have pledged their support for Tunisia, the nation where the Arab Spring did originate, sparking sweeping changes in North Africa and the Middle East. More from VOA's Lada Chahok.
Protesters unfurled a huge Tunisian flag in front of the Bardo Museum and chanted messages condemning the killing of innocent people.
Killing people this way, whatever their ideas are, is really terrible and unacceptable.
The terrorist group Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack that left 23 people dead. In a recorded message, a male voice says the attack is only the beginning of what is yet to come. At the funeral of a police officer slain in the attack, Tunisian officials said the nation is determined to eradicate terrorism.
We will overcome it. We will eradicate terrorism. We are confident. The support of the people is the proof.
Most of those killed were visitors from Japan and Europe. European Union leaders meeting Thursday in Brussels held a minute of silence in honor of the dead and pledged to support Tunisia.
The people of Tunisia, and especially the young people of Tunisia, have to know that European Union is fully with them to give them a future of hope, a future full of good things, not violence.
In Paris, protesters gathered outside the Tunisian embassy Thursday in a show of solidarity with the former French colony.
We need to convey the message to the terrorists that we are not afraid. We are still standing. Tunisian women and men are still standing. Congratulations to the police force and the soldiers.
French President François Hollande praised Tunisia as a model of successful transition to democracy after the Arab Spring. He said Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve has been dispatched to Tunis to discuss how France can help.
I sent the Interior Minister. He will be in Tunisia tomorrow so we can further strengthen our cooperation in terms of security because in the fight against terrorism, we must be exemplary.
The United States also offered support to the North African country. In a phone call to his Tunisian counterpart, Beji Caid Essebi, President Barack Obama commended the Tunisian people for their commitment to standing strong and united in the face of terrorism. His spokesman expressed U.S. support earlier.
They obviously live in a very volatile, even dangerous part of the world right now. We certainly are interested in doing what we can to try to support the Tunisian government and the Tunisian people as they confront this threat.
The attack on a major cultural attraction in Tunis is a blow to Tunisia's tourism. Prime Minister Habib Essid said security has been boosted in all major cities and the borders of the Mediterranean country. Several suspects have been arrested in connection with the attack. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
The Islamic State militant group has released a new online video purporting to show the beheadings of three Kurdish Peshmerga fighters with a warning that it will execute dozens more prisoners unless the Kurds halt their bombing of the extremist. The Kurds, supported by a U.S.-led coalition and by Iran, are fighting the extremist in northern Iraq's autonomous Kurdish region, as well as Syria. They've driven back the extremist in Nineveh and Kirkuk provinces. The opening scenes of this six-minute video released at the start of the Persian New Year show people allegedly injured by Peshmerga rocket fire. Then the focus shifts to three men clad in orange jumpsuits with their hands bound. Later, they appear individually kneeling before being beheaded by Kurdish-speaking militants dressed in black. In a direct address to the Kurdish leader, Masoud Barzani, one person says, "We warned you before that for every rocket you fire on those under the care of the Islamic State, we will kill one of your own prisoners with your own hands." Earlier this week, Kurdish forces shelled Islamic State inside Mosul in retaliation for a militant attack on an Erbil market. The video has not yet been authenticated. The United Nations is calling on African countries affected by terrorism to draw up legislation to facilitate hot pursuit. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Uganda.
Jean-Paul Laborde, executive director of the United Nations Counter-Terrorism Committee, says terrorism suspects are escaping because police are not permitted to cross national boundaries without a warrant.
Of course, there is more to be done, not only by the international community, but also at the regional level, in terms of police cooperation, which is already well done among the countries of Central Africa. But it's also needed to establish a link with the other parts of Africa, especially with ECOWAS and with the countries of this region.
Laborde says he is visiting Cameroon with United Nations counter-terrorism partner organizations to encourage more cooperation among West and Central African states, which have been fighting the Boko Haram insurgency, which has spilled outside of Nigeria's border the last few years.
We have here with us other organizations such as Interpol. It means that with all the organizations, we put recommendations and we'll, of course, follow up to get the necessary support to combat terrorism in the full compliance with the rule of law.
Boko Haram militants have been fighting for 6 years to impose a strict form of Sharia law across northern Nigeria. That fight has spilled over borders into Cameroon and Chad, and has taken on a new international dimension since Boko Haram declared allegiance earlier this month to the Middle East-based terrorist group called Islamic State. Earlier this year, Nigeria, Niger, Chad, Benin, and Cameroon agreed to create a regional force of more than 8,000 troops to fight Boko Haram and have begun cross-border military operations. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Black smoke has been billowing into the air of the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa as 6.1 tons of illegal elephant tusks, ivory trinkets, carvings, and various forms of jewelry burn on a wooden pyre that government officials set alight to discourage poaching and the ivory trade. Ethiopia becomes the second African country this year to burn its ivory stockpile as global efforts increase for the conservation of elephants, a vulnerable species whose numbers are quickly dwindling as they're killed for their ivory tusks. Dawood Momi, the director general of the Ethiopian Wildlife and Conservation Authority, said Friday that the ivory being burnt was confiscated from various people over the past 20 years. Most of the ivory was being smuggled through Ethiopia to a third country, he says. He did not identify which country. The anti-censorship organization GreatFire.org says it's sustaining its first distributed denial-of-service attack. Group says the attack disrupts web pages by overwhelming them with requests. GreatFire.org says the onslaught began earlier this week after it was mentioned in a Wall Street Journal article on Chinese censorship. GreatFire.org is the not-for-profit website designed to highlight online censorship relating to China's so-called Great Firewall. It says that its mirror website, set up to circumvent blocks in China, are currently suffering a distributed denial-of-service attack. A DDoS overwhelms the target. In this case, GreatFire's organization's mirror websites with a deluge of data with the intention of causing the network to crash. GreatFire.org is presently reporting 2.6 billion requests per hour. That's 2,500 times more than its usual traffic. and it says it is just managing to cope, having switched to faster servers and using other techniques to manage the load. However, it adds that it fears the attack may be intensified at any time. VOA's Sarah Williams spoke about it with Jonathan Katz, the director of the Cybersecurity Center at the University of Maryland.
There have been examples of where DDoS attacks have been connected to China. In this particular case, I think it's still speculation. I mean, there was speculation that this was a result of the mention of the company in the Wall Street Journal article. But as far as I know, I haven't seen anything that would indicate any conclusive proof that it's due to actions of China.
And I suppose it could work that somebody, say, in China or in another country could carry this out, not necessarily within China itself, but from somewhere else in the world.
Oh, yeah, it could be anywhere. I mean, there's a couple of basic mechanisms that people use. One general mechanism is that if a hacker or a hacker organization or a government organization, for that matter, controls a lot of computers, which it can obtain control of, let's say, using a botnet, meaning that they've been able to compromise honest people's computers around the world, then what they can do is they can, by controlling this botnet, by controlling these different machines, they can arrange such that all these different machines are simultaneously sending traffic to the targeted website, thereby overloading it and causing the denial of service attack. So, you know, from that point of view, anybody could do that. There are other ways to carry out the attack, and one way I've seen connected to China, which was, I guess, particularly interesting or particularly clever, depending on how you look at it, is that China actually controls the website that their users go to when they type a particular address in their browser. And so what has happened in the past is that China will set things up, for example, such that anybody trying to access, say, Google.com will instead be redirected to the targeted company's website rather than to Google. So this means that suddenly anybody inside of China trying to access Google is having their traffic redirected to the targeted server. And the kind of traffic that Google can handle versus the kind of traffic that a smaller operator can handle might be very different, and so this might completely overwhelm the target.
Well, greatfire.org is trying to combat this attack by a couple of ways. I mean, it is calling on Amazon, which is the service that it uses, you know, to help, I guess, with the amount of the cost for the bandwidth, because they've had to spend a lot more money. It's just so expensive, right, to try to withstand this. And then also they said that they've upgraded to faster servers and other techniques. I mean, I guess this is something that greatfire.org has to do, you know, to try to withstand this.
Yeah, that's right. There are other mechanisms that they can try, but that's, you know, typically the most immediately effective one is just to increase the capability that you have to respond to these requests. In this particular case, I think it wasn't the greatfire.org website in particular that was being targeted. It was what their model is that they host mirror websites for websites that are banned in China, and they're hosting these on, for example, Amazon. So they might have, you know, a mirror of a Google site that they are hosting on Amazon, and then that's what's being targeted by these attackers. So, you know, maybe they're paying Amazon for more resources, just like you mentioned before, that they're paying for more bandwidth. So they're doing that with the server resources as well.
Jonathan Katz, the director of the Cybersecurity Center at the University of Maryland, speaking with our Sarah Williams. China has a long history of blocking online services and reportedly blocked the whole of Google in the build-up to last year's 25th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square protest. In December, Gmail went dark again as well. This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman. Could this be another sign of global warming? The sea ice in the Arctic Ocean has fallen to its lowest recorded level for the winter season. The U.S.-based National Snow and Ice Data Center says the maximum coverage of Arctic ice this year was 14.5 million square kilometers. That's the lowest it's been since 1979, when satellite records began. The ice was 1.1 million square kilometers smaller than the 1981 to 2010 average and below the previous lowest maximum of 2011. A recent study found that Arctic sea ice had thinned by 65% between 1975 and 2012. It said the maximum level of sea ice for winter was reached this year on February 25th, and the ice was now beginning to melt as the Arctic moved into spring. Meanwhile, a climate initiative in the Catholic Church has emerged and engaged more than 50 countries in a fast for the planet. As VOA's Roseanne Scurver reports, while it's common for Catholics to fast in the days leading up to Easter, the Lenten fast for climate justice is calling on all people of faith to fast both from food and fossil fuels that are warming the planet.
Each day for 40 days, a different country takes up the call. The United States is the 25th nation to join the fast, which in Washington was a prayer vigil on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol.
Let us pray. Give us humble and open hearts, O Lord our God, to listen to your word and to put it into practice.
Theologians and lay activists from different faiths joined the vigil to take a stand on climate change as a moral, ethical, and spiritual issue. Patrick Carolyn is executive director of the Franciscan Action Network, the grassroots group that organized the event.
As people of faith, we have to protect and care for God's creation. And so we're hoping that our legislators will start paying attention. So that's kind of what we're hoping to do is get our leaders, our faith leaders, our priests and our rabbis to start speaking in the pulpits with their prophetic voices and talking about how this is the most important issue.
Rabbi David Schneer took that pulpit today with his hand in a fist over his heart. He says it's a Jewish tradition during Yom Kippur, the holy fast day, to ask for forgiveness from sins. Here, it's a sign for action.
Kind of like knocking on the door of our hearts, to open our hearts. That's one way some people do it, as kind of like to afflict oneself. You know, like, I really should be hurting because of all the transgressions I've done.
Others followed as the rabbi read a list of wrongs against the earth.
For the wrong of filling land and ocean with filth, toxins, and garbage. And for the wrong of extinguishing forever wondrous species which you saved from the waters of the flood. And for the wrong...
Next, the Reverend Lennox Yearwood stepped before the crowd, wearing a black cap that read, Die Vest. It was a reminder of the threat that fossil fuels play in warming the planet. In spirited remarks, he argued that climate skeptics could be a catalyst for positive change.
So on this day, I call upon all the climate deniers, because you can actually be the rock in which this movement can be built upon. How amazing will it be when Southern Republicans, when they are saying that climate change is real, how amazing will it be when those who are denied over and over are now saying that the time is now to fight climate change.
Reverend Yearwood says it's not only the politicians who must act, but each and every one of us.
Because the work of all of us, Republican and Democrat, black and white, male and female, and they will rise up and they will say that we are fossil free at last. Fossil free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are fossil free at last.
The vigil ended with a contemplative moment as each person scattered a handful of fresh dirt on the Capitol grounds. Patrick Carolyn hopes the symbolic gesture will sow the seeds of change.
The whole earth is at stake, and we have a very short period of time. Years ago, we talked about sustainability, and then we talked about adaptability, and now we're talking about survivability. And so everything is at stake.
The Lenten Fast for Climate Justice is part of a 365-day fast for the climate. The young people, environmentalists, and people of faith in the global movement have been fasting one day a month since December to bring attention to climate change. The campaign will culminate this coming December at the summit in Paris, where world leaders hope to sign a new treaty to address global warming. Roseanne Scurble, VOA News, Washington.
One blue sky above us, one ocean lapping all our shores.
Thank you so much for joining us today on International Edition. Remember, you can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. Use your smartphone as well. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a nice day.